Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of Really Cool People, a podcast produced by Schweitzer Church. I'm your host, Jason Leininger. This is a place to hear stories of really cool people whose stories are fascinating, and it's a place to be inspired, encouraged, and challenged through moments of serendipity. It's my joy in the next few moments to introduce you to someone who, on the one hand, probably thinks of themselves like many people do as somebody that's ordinary, but is in reality a really cool person. C.S. Lewis gave us these inspiring words when he said, "There are no ordinary people. You and I will never meet or never talk to a mere mortal." Today, we have the privilege of listening to Ruth Ann White. Ruth Ann is a woman who is in her 90s, and she has lived a long and fascinating life. She's going to tell us a number of stories along the way, and one of those seminal stories, one of the big stories of her life, involves her daughter, Deanne. So I invite you to lean in and listen to the story of Ruth Ann White. Well, today it's our joy to welcome Ruth Ann White. Ruth Ann, welcome.
Thank you.
And tell us about yourself. Tell us your story.
Well, my story's not terribly interesting, I'll say, but I agreed to tell you about it. I'm one of four children, the oldest, and I grew up in a little country store out East Sunshine, Turner Station. You've probably been out there. My sister still lives in the house where all four of us were born. And, of course, she's 93 now. She's my sassy sister, and she might not want me to tell you how old she is, but I've already said it. but anyway, you know, we were in that store until I was, I think, about 18, maybe, and I went to Rogersville High School, but I also had 1 year at Central, which was the only high school at that time, and a year in the ninth grade at Reed, and I stayed with an uncle and aunt who lived in town, and we, of course, lived out in the country. Mm-hmm. But then I had a year in college, and I worked at the welfare office for a year, and I typed, I got out of high school at 16, so I guess I was 17 about that time, or maybe 18, and I worked typing case histories for foster children, and it was kind of a sad thing, but we had little earphones, and people talked into a cylinder, and we listened to their case, we'd listen to their stories and have to type what they were saying. And some of them would just drift off like they were about to go to sleep once in a while. But anyway, I did that over a year. And then I had a chance to get to, then I went to college again. And then I had a chance to work at the courthouse. And my mother developed brain cancer, which she was sick for about a year and 9 months. So I had, back then there were no brain surgeons in Springfield. And so we had to take her to St. Louis to Barnes for her surgery. And at my ripe old age, I stayed up there with her. And she didn't want me to leave the hospital until about 9 o'clock at night. But we had some real close friends that I was staying with. I had to take a bus, a streetcar, and another bus to get to their house. But, you know, my folks didn't think one thing about me doing that at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. Of course, I'd be scared to death when I'd get off that last bus. I'd run all the way to their house. And so then I came back home. And my mother was good friends with my mother was the best Christian woman I've ever known, but she was good friends with the guy who was appointed as the recorder of deeds when the old recorder of deeds died. And so he finished out his term. And, of course, it was our political party. And my mother was good friends with this guy because he'd been burned in World War II. And my mother worked at O'Reilly General Hospital for quite a while. And she ran the A&D office, and the guys who'd get weekend passes would go through her office. And she'd tell them how nice they looked and how much they'd improved and all of that, you know, because it was a hospital at that time, you know, where Evangel is now. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, this guy, he'd been in a plane wreck. And I mean, his entire face was burned completely. He had no hair, no. But anyway, then he was appointed to take this man's place. And so he gave me a job because he liked my mother. I didn't get it on my own merits. But he, you know, he was just crazy about my mother. And she was such a wonderful, wonderful woman. But anyway, then I did that for almost 2 years. And then I'm a Democrat. My husband was a Republican. So, but we had a good, you know, we had a good life. We always voted for the same people, whatever. We always voted for whoever we thought was the best man or lady. But there weren't many ladies in Greene County. And I mean, many ladies who ran for office, put it that way. But anyway, the two guys who got in office to go to the legislature in Jeff City came in our office all the time. And of course, they conferred with my boss all the time. And I was always real nice to them. They were old, and I mean, not as old as I am, but at that time, I thought they were old. And so they wanted to take me to Jeff City to work for them. And my boss talked to me about it. And he said, "You think you'd want to do that?" I said, "Oh, yeah, I'd love to." So I went to Jeff City and worked one term of the legislature. And then I fell in love. And so they wanted me to stay up there and work in an office. It was by the governor's office, but I don't remember what office it was. And I was in love, so I wanted to come home. Mm-hmm. So I did. So then I decided that I'd always wanted to be a teacher. And I decided, well, I'd see about if I could get a job teaching, but I didn't have enough hours. But we knew the county superintendent, I think he was called, superintendent of schools county-wise. They don't have that anymore. And so I talked to him, and he said, "Well, would you be willing to go back to college?" And I said, "Well, yeah, but I can't afford it right now because, you know, my mother was sick." And so anyway, I took night classes and daytime classes. And after we were married, and when it got to be 12 years later, I graduated. And I'd already taught 8 years, I think. But I had to pass this test. But as long as I kept going to school back in those days, then I still could keep a job. And so then when after I got married, then I was teaching at Walt Disney, but that it was called Kickapoo at that time. But then when they built the high school, then they called the high school Kickapoo and called my school Walt Disney. And so then I did my husband's book work. And of course, I said my husband only wanted to marry me because he wanted a good old Methodist school teacher to rear his 8-year-old. And to be a mother to his 8-year-old. So I had Danny, and he was my son, and Art. And then I quit teaching. And then I went back and was third grade supervisor at Greenwood for 2 years. The third grade teacher wanted to go get her doctorate. Mm-hmm. And so I did that for 2 years. Then when she came back, they wanted me to go to the second grade. And I had my degree by that time, but I didn't have my master's. I just had some work on it. But I thought, you know, I can't be a good mother, and I took care of arts book work and be a good accountant and payroll clerk and general flunky. And I thought, well, I can't do that. And so I talked to Art about it. And he said, well, I never did want you to teach. And he said, I want you to be at home. And I had a flat tire one day, and he just went off to work. And I had to call somebody to come and fix my tire so I could get to school. I thought, this is it. So I quit. And then from then on, I stayed home. And then after Danny, he went away. He went to Rolla one year, but he didn't do too well because he didn't have any supervision up there. So anyway, let's see, where am I? And so then Danny came home, and he had dropped two classes. Art made him go to summer school, but he also worked for us in the summertime too, pouring concrete. And he was a good worker, but he wasn't interested in our business. He said that was too much like work. And he said he didn't want to get up at 5:30 and maybe be figuring jobs at midnight, you know. And so Art told him, he says, well, you're going to have to go to school this summer. And he said, of course, we'd save money to send him to college in case something would ever happen to Art. And so I'm going to be talking too long, I'm thinking.
You're good.
Well, anyway, he decided, Art said, now you can go back to Rolla, and we'll pay for it still. But you're going to make your grades, and you're going to take a full schedule. Because he says, I'm not spending money if you're just going to go up there and goof off like you did this past year. And so it made Danny mad, and he went down to the, he was in the Air Force.
But
he went down to the Air Force recruiting office and signed up. And he had to leave Springfield the next morning at 8 o'clock. And so that night he cried all night. And I said, well, honey, you've just goofed yourself off. But I said, you know, this will help you grow up. So he was in the Air Force. It was 3 or 4 years they had to stay at that time. I don't know. But anyway, he served his full time in the Air Force. And he was in Colorado Springs most of the time. This was the Vietnamese War, and he did not ever have to go overseas, and I was thankful for that. But he met a little girl out there and married her while he was there. Then he came back home, and we had a rental house that they lived in, and then we sent him back to college here at MSU, and he got his degree, and. So then, you know, so he had a really good life, but he died with a heart attack at 70. And so then we, you know, had no children then because Deanne was gone and he was gone. And so we just kind of carried on for a while. But, you know, I just think the good Lord just gives you strength when you love him and you know he loves you. He gives you strength for all these things that happen in your life. And we did have a good life, and you know, we retired early, and we were able to travel a lot, and we had a place down on Bull Shoals that we spent a lot of time. But after both our kids were gone, we didn't want it anymore. We didn't want it. It wasn't any fun without your kids. Mm-hmm. And so we sold it, and but then we still traveled quite a bit after that. And then one day we went down to the College of the Ozarks for lunch at Keter because he liked their food down there. And on the way home, he says, you know, I think I'd kind of like to give them some money. And I said, well, if you've got it to give them, what do you want to, how much and what do you want to do? He said, well, I'd like to give them some money for their engineering department. I said, they don't have an engineering department down there. And he said, well, when we get home, you call and ask them what something they're working on that they might want money for. I called down there, and the girl I talked to is their foundation person. And I told her, you know, what Art had in mind. He wanted to give them money. I just laughingly said he wanted to give it to you for your engineering department. And I told him you didn't have one. She said, this is a God thing. She said, I've been in a meeting today since 8 o'clock this morning until now. Just got out of that meeting. And she said, we are setting up an engineering department, but we don't have a building, so we're going to run our classes in the science building until we can afford to get a building built. And so Art says, well, I'll give them their building. I mean, and so we have an engineering building down there in Deanne's memory. And then when he died, he gave them more money, and it's going to be a building for the preschool. And then at the end of it, there's going to be a big tornado shelter for the students. So that'll be great. But they are so slow because, you know, they use student help down there. And they have to work 15 hours a week. And so it takes forever. We thought that engineering building was never going to be built. But Art was still, he was still going, but not working. But he was still, you know, able to get around when it was finished. So he got to go to the dedication, and of course, you know, that it pleased him a lot. But of course, he won't know anything about this one, but he might. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But this building, they have a lot of the stuff all in place to start it, mm-hmm. but they haven't really started it yet. But that'll be, you know, for the preschool. So we're excited about that. I am. And my family are. Yeah. So that's kind of the story of my life. How long did I talk?
Well, you've gone, I don't know, 15, 16 minutes.
Have I really?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what else to tell you.
Well,
that kind of tells you what I've done. If you want to, know what I've done here at church?
Well, let me ask you some questions.
Yeah.
And when you want to talk about church stuff, that's great to talk about church stuff.
Okay.
You want to talk about your faith journey? Now, that's fantastic.
Well, my faith journey, I don't know what to tell you about it. I mean, it's been sad sometimes. Not really my faith. I've always trusted in the Lord to take care of me and to take. But sometimes when these bad things have happened in our life, you just can't help but think, where is the Lord? And why did he let this happen? Well, I don't feel like the Lord lets it happen. I just think life, this is life. And I don't know. See, that's one of my questions. But I'll find out someday. Mm-hmm. I'll find out about it. But you know, I've always trusted the Lord to take care. And of course, right now, you know, I'm living out there all by myself. You can cut that out if you want to. But I said that, and this is nothing for my story either. But I always said if Art died before I did, I wouldn't live out there by myself. But what I'd do. They were building this little motel up on the corner, the little business motel. I'd rent a room there just, you know, like by the month or so. And so I'd stay at home. And when it got dark, then I'd just go up there and sleep. Then I'd come back home. And that's really that was my plan. I've been in that house every night since he died. And I just go to bed and I trust the Lord to take care of me. And wake up the next morning, the sun's shining most of the time, and I just thank the Lord, and I just, you know, I just pray and thank him for his graciousness to me, because I haven't really done much for him. But I did, and as far as things like my volunteer work, you want to hear about that?
Sure.
Well, I volunteered 24 years with the Cancer Society. I took care of their loan closet. My little girl and I, when Deanne was 10, that year she died, we had our equipment stored at Cox, because I was always kind of, well, I worked 40 years at Cox as a volunteer. Wow. And I did Meals on Wheels. And for our church, when they started Cross Lines, I was the coordinator for our church. You know, we did once a month, mm-hmm. we did food. But they just had a little office down behind the First and Calvary. And they didn't have their building like they have mm-hmm. now. And but I did that, I think I did that 14 years.
Wow.
And so I'm kind of a, I was kind of a volunteer's volunteer, but, you know, I could do a lot of my bookwork and stuff at night. And so I'd get out and roam around in the daytime. but I did a lot of volunteer work here. I worked, I think I worked once a week in the office for quite a while when Clayton was here. And, of course, Clayton was kind of my foster son, mm-hmm. he'll tell you that
yes.
too. And of course, you know, Art and I both just love Clayton and Ann and the little children. And when Ann died, I kept the kids every Monday. And I did that until Clayton left here. That was my Monday mm-hmm. volunteer work. And I take them to school in the wintertime, go pick them up after school and take them back home with me. And so, of course, Deanne, you know, was already dead at mm-hmm. that time.
So, because some people may not live in Springfield who listen to this and may not be fully familiar with everything, Clayton Smith was a pastor at Schweitzer Church in the mid-80s, mm-hmm. and his wife passed away. And
yes.
And so that was a
tragically.
Yeah,
she got sick one day. She was an asthmatic. Hmm. And they, on Sunday after church, they'd gone to Calvert's cafeteria to have lunch. And their lettuce, they put sulfite on it. And asthmatics cannot handle sulfite. But they didn't know it at the time. And she got sick and she was dead in 2 days. It started with an asthma attack.
Wow.
And then it just, you know, and he took her to the hospital that evening.
Yeah.
And then she was there, I'm pretty sure it was 2 days, and died then. And that left him with those two little children. And Caleb was only 5, and Krista was 8. And so I still, you know, I was still keeping them mm-hmm. all that time. But I loved Ann. She was a wonderful, wonderful lady.
You've mentioned her a number of times in passing, but you haven't really told the story about Deanne.
Oh my! You want?
You can tell as much
or
as little as you want.
I'll tell everybody about Deanne. I mean, she was her daddy's pride and joy, and also mine. Mm-hmm. And she was adopted. And the day we got her, she was 6 days old, and she weighed 6 pounds, 6 ounces. And we took her out on the job. Art was paving. It was either a widening of Grant Street or one of those streets over on the north side that as it went into Highway 13. I can't remember. But anyhow, he was widening some street over there. And we took her over there to show her to the crew. Because we were so proud of her. And she was just a special kind of person all her life. And she loved old people. And my, oh, I also was a campfire leader, and I was president of the Campfire Association for a couple of years here in this area. And I took my campfire kids to camp, and all 15 of them. Deanne went to school. Her school was Greenwood then, and she was going to be in the fifth grade when she died. And it was in, she died in June. And she had a little girl out at our farm, and they were riding their horses. And Deanne had been to an Arabian horse show, and her horse was just a small saddle horse. And she thought it talked, and she could talk to it. And it got foundered about 2 weeks before she died. And Deanne would sit up with it at night, 10 years old. And then I'd go about 10:30 or 11:30 and then let her go to bed. And I'd sit with it. And then Art would come about 3 o'clock and he'd sit with it. And the horse recovered. And then three weeks later, she was dead from that horse. But I didn't blame the horse, because she was trying to teach it to do an Arabian horse trick. And she and I think there were 5 little girls out there at our farm. And I was in the house, and she got the horse to do it one time. But the horse was getting hot. This is what the kids told me. And she said, I'm going to make her do it one more time so she'll remember. And one little girl said, well, she's awfully hot. You probably shouldn't do that. Well, it'd been raining. Well, when she raised her legs up, her back legs crossed, and she went down. The kids said her back end kind of went down. And then Deanne was riding her out, and then she just flipped over and rolled over Deanne. I mean, Deanne could have jumped off, but she was trying to ride her back up, you know. Uh-huh. And then she lived about 3 hours, but we rushed her to the hospital. And Dr. Crichton, do you know him? Mm-hmm. And Dr. Kasha, they were partners. And they just, actually, they hadn't been back, and they hadn't been here too long. They just had gotten out of their residency, but they were the best doctors in this town. And they worked on her. And of course, it just crushed both of them. And, of course, I volunteered at the hospital at that time. And I think Dr. Kasha, I think he avoided me. He didn't want to talk to me. but anyway, so that was her story. But she was so kind. And that day that she died, this one little girl was going to spend the night. And so I took Deanne to her music lesson. She just was starting back in her music for the summer. And it was her first lesson, first new lesson. And she'd practiced, and she did real well with it. Well, anyway, then we picked up the little girl, and they would go to the movie. There was a movie inside the mall at that time. And, you know, your kids could go to the mall. Nobody bothered them, nothing. And so I dropped them off at the mall, and they went. But I gave Deanne money so they could go to the pizza place and get pizza for their lunch. And so when I picked them up, I said, "Well, how was the pizza?" And Deanne said, "Well," she said, I can just see her. She said, "Well," she said, "we went to the pizza place." But she said, "I got Lexi a pizza there, but I just didn't get one." And I said, "Well, why not?" Well, she said, "You know, on down the hall, there was that pizza place where you could just go and buy a little piece of pizza and stand there and eat it." And she said it was a lot cheaper. And she said, "You know, you always have wanted that tape, or I can't remember if it was a tape of Midnight at the Oasis." She said, "Every time that comes on the radio, you'll say something about, oh, one of these days, I'm just going to buy that because I love that song." And she had bought that song for me. And she used her pizza money to do, but that's just the way she was. And she was that way all her life. And of course, I get weepy when I think about it. But, you know, it's a happy kind of weakness mm-hmm. that I have. And but she just was so special.
And her name's on a hospital now here in town. Mm-hmm.
And it's on the engineering building down at the College of the Ozarks, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She really impacted both you and art. And
oh, my. She sure did. Mm-hmm. And she made me a better person. I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. She sure did.
Love has a way of doing that.
Yeah, I guess it does. It does. I guess it does.
You said you fell in love with art.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that at all?
Well, I guess, I don't know what I'd say. I just, my uncle had a restaurant out on the corner of Glenstone and Division. And so when I would come home from Jeff City, my folks would pick me up there to take me on out to Turner Station. Mm-hmm. And so Art and Danny would come in there. A lot of times when I'd be waiting for my folks, and my uncle had one of those games. What is that game where you roll a disc? You know, you roll a disc on a table, on a long table.
Kind of, and it goes up into like a different number.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Danny and I, you know, Danny was, he was an ornery little Dickens, but he, you know, he just liked everybody. But Art was very reserved. We didn't even talk. You know, he'd just sit up at the counter and have his drink. And when the jukebox played all the quarters were, you got five songs for a quarter. Mm-hmm. Then he'd give Danny another quarter to put in the jukebox. And then Danny and I'd play that game. And then Danny'd run kind of back and forth occasionally to his dad. And anyway, that's how I met Art. And so they had a really bad ice storm in Bolivar. And so the week that happened, when I came home from anyway, that's not important. Anyway, the week that happened, I was waiting for my folks to pick me up. And Art and Danny were in the restaurant. And Art said, we're going to drive up to see the ice storm because Bolivar was just devastated. Huh. No electricity, no nothing. And he said, I just kind of like to see what the ice has done up there. He said, would you like to ride up with us? And I said, well, yeah, I would. I'd like to see that too. So that was the beginning of our love affair.
Wow. How did he propose?
He said, my sister and her husband were in the front seat, and we were in the back seat of the car. And he said, would you ever want to marry an old mean person like me?
What an offer.
And I said, well, sure I would. And so that was the way he proposed.
Wow.
And so then we got married in September of that year. And, of course, I went back to school, you know, teaching. Yeah. And
how long were you married?
It would have been 69 years had he lived five more months. Mm-hmm. 68 years plus. That's a long time.
It is a long time. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you said early on was that you were a Democrat and he was Republican.
Yeah. And that didn't bother too much. Except now, after we built the house, have you ever been out?
I have.
Well, you know, I would be downstairs maybe, and he'd be upstairs. So he would watch, you know, we'd watch the same political speech. And sometimes he'd say, well, I wish you'd listen to him. I'd say, I don't like what he's saying or something. Then, you know, we'd both be watching. But most of the time, we voted for the very same people. But he always told everybody that the day that it was an election day, he said Ruth Ann never mentioned anything about going to vote.
Oh man! I love that story because, you know, we live in times right now where a lot of people have got some different politics, and it's I've heard someone say, you know, I've got to try and find a way so we can get along so we don't have a civil war at our own kitchen table.
Well, that could happen, but that never happened with us. We usually just kind of, well, actually, there was never too much that you could do if you were a Democrat. Because our family was probably the only one in Greene County. So you had to pick the best Republican, usually. Yeah. And that's what we did. Because usually the Democrats just fill out the ticket, just mm-hmm. like they still do. Mm-hmm. You know, they finally get somebody who put their name on the ballot.
Well, I haven't talked about politics with very many people at this table, but I really appreciated how the two of you loved one another, stuck by one another, and like politics did not divide you at all.
No. Oh, no. It never did. But once in a while for a presidential election, and, you know, and I'd say, well, now, like I voted for the old man Bush. And I voted for Eisenhower. And I voted for, I can't even think who else I voted for. But, of course, I voted for Obama, and I think Art did too. He said he did, unless he was lying to me. But he was not racial. He had no racial bad feelings. Mm-hmm. But he always had to use, in later years, he had to use minorities mm-hmm. In his business. Mm-hmm. You know, the government made him use minorities. And so they were all black people that he used. And but some of them were completely worthless, but some of the white people he had were worthless too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we both kind of... race didn't really bother us that much. And you know, the funniest thing, when Clayton was here, if we'd have kids come in, like a group of a choir or something, if there was a black child, then that's who I always kept, because Clayton knew that it was fine with me to keep black, you know, any color.
Mm-hmm. I do. So you're over 90 years of age?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Almost called you less, yes, ma'am.
What are you looking forward to?
Oh, I'm looking forward just, you know, like day to day. I'm just looking forward to be able to take care of myself until the Lord decides He wants me. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, just not be a burden to anybody. And I'm looking forward to meeting my family. Mm-hmm. In heaven. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be a happy day mm-hmm. when I meet Deanne and Art and Danny. And my parents, of course. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of teary. It's just because I'm a sentimental person. And I can't help it. But I'm also looking forward to other stuff too. Actually, I'm looking forward to when I really might feel like coming to church every Sunday. But I don't, you know, I can't walk very well. And I'm a fall risk, you know, according to mm-hmm. my records.
Yeah.
And I am, because that's how I broke my back the first time lifting on Art. the second time, I fell out the door. I was drunk.
No. I don't think you were drunk.
No, my housekeeper was there, and she rolled up some little rugs, you know, because and I thought, well, I'd go shake those out for her so she wouldn't have to go outside to do it. And she had them rolled up, and I guess I got my foot caught in that, you know, in the rug.
Yeah.
And I took a step, and when I started to take the other step, my foot was caught, and it just threw me over that step and the next one and on the concrete, on the exposed aggregate. That's how I did it the second time. But, so, you know, I have to be very careful.
Yeah.
But you know, I do look forward to how long, you know, I look mm-hmm. forward to being able to do a few things that I want to do while I'm, you know, while I'm still here. But I do look forward to meeting my family. I do. I look forward to that. But I'm not going to do anything about it.
Okay. What's your favorite place to eat?
Oh, gosh. It used to be, oh, gosh, now what's the name? It used to be the Italian place down there on Glenstone. Because, what's the name of that thing? When I was young, there was a place out on Glenstone, I mean, out on Sunshine and Camel. I can't think of the name of that. This is what's happened with my brain. What is the name of that restaurant? The Italian restaurant right down on Glenstone. You know, you turn left and go down to Battlefield. And it's in, you know, there's the men's thing, and then there's the Italian restaurant.
I'm not sure. I don't know that I've looked
long enough.
What
is the name of that thing? But that used to be my favorite place because I don't eat steak. Art always said, he said, she's a cheap date. Said she'd rather have a McDonald's hamburger than a McDonald's double. What's it called? McDouble.
McDouble.
She'd rather have that than a steak any day. And I said, yes, I would. And I'm still that way. I'm a pretty cheap date, all right.
Well, you are an absolute joy to be around and to talk to.
Well, thank you. Thank
I appreciate you. There's a final question I like to ask everyone, and that is, what's a word of sage advice that you like to give to people that you share with those who are around you?
Well, I just say smile and be happy with what you have and what you're doing. And just thank the Lord every day, every night, that you're still alive. And I do say that. But I just think, put a smile on your face is the best thing you can do
mm-hmm.
around anybody.
Well, thank you. This has been a treat and a joy, Ruthann.
I hope I made you smile.
You did. Laugh a lot. Laugh a lot.
Oh,
I loved
man.
It.
You better turn that thing
okay.
off.
Okay. A big thank you to Ruthann for sharing her story. I hope as you listened along with me that you were inspired, encouraged, and challenged, and that you begin to behold the really cool people who are around you. This bonus episode of Really Cool People is produced by Switzer Church, Springfield, Missouri. Taylor Likes is our executive producer and editor, and I'm your host, Jason Leininger. You can help us by liking, reviewing, and sharing this podcast. I hope you tune in about a month to hear another bonus episode of the Really Cool People podcast. Until next time.